Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lost Christmas Podcast. Christmas is the theme, and on this podcast, I explore the ins and outs of the holiday. Here you'll find history, folklore, mythology, recipes, stories, and tales from across the globe, and so much more. My name is Jeff, and I absolutely love Christmas. I'm so glad that you're joining today. Each episode has a different topic or two, diving deeply or shallowly into it as I share what I learn about the history of Christmas. At the end of the episode, you'll hear a short summary of the story from The Lost Years of Santa Claus, a book that explores the missing chapters in the life of the person we know as Father Christmas, St. Nicholas, Santa Claus, and by many other names. Each story is broken into two or three parts, so be sure to listen to each episode to hear the whole story. Welcome, everybody, to a new episode, and I wanted to start this episode with a new feature that I'm going to include for the next 11 episodes until the end of the season, and I'm going to recommend a Christmas movie, a Christmas TV episode or Christmas special, and a book. I hope you guys are as curious as I am about all the different Christmas-related media material. I've gotten several emails asking for recommendations, and so I figured what better way than to just dedicate a little bit of every episode to it. So, first off, we have a movie called It Happened on Fifth Avenue from 1947, I believe, and it's about a homeless man who every year he moves into a vacationing rich man's home. It's an excellent movie. Puts me in the holiday spirit. I absolutely adore it. I've seen it a couple of times now. It's not my favorite Christmas movie, but it is one that I think gets overlooked far too often. So give this one a look. I think you'll really enjoy it. Next, for a Christmas TV episode, we're going to go to season 2, episode 12 of Home Improvement for an episode called I'm Scheming of a White Christmas. Tim Allen, I find hilarious. I love the Santa Claus series of movies. I think it's really funny. I highly recommend this episode. It's comical. It's got the typical home improvement humor. So if that's your thing, I think you will enjoy it as well. And then lastly, for a book, A Boy Called Christmas. So it's been optioned and it will be a Netflix series or movie. I'm not quite sure which one they're going to do. The book is pretty short. It's worth a read. It's got a companion book, The Girl That Saved Christmas. So I highly recommend both of them. They're both very good. They're easy reads. They're fun. They're very lighthearted, good for kids. So I'm looking forward to the Netflix version of this and to see what they change and what they don't. But there you have it. So there's a movie, a TV episode, and a book. I hope you guys are as interested as I am. And please give me feedback once you guys watch and listen. I'd love to hear your responses. And we'll start each episode with this moving on. Today, we are going to talk about Russian Santa Claus, or more properly, Ded Moroz, or Grandfather Frost. There are tons of varieties of this character, and most of them coming from Russia and Far Eastern Europe, for the most part. If you sink down into the part of the old Soviet bloc, you'll find history of this as well. But there are lots of stories behind the story of Grandfather Frost, and they go well before the most common tellings of Santa Claus and St. Nicholas. And so I wanted to talk about this because it's got a really cool history, there's some really cool characters, and I think everyone here will really enjoy this. And yeah, so here we go. So unlike Santa Claus as we know him, so we know the birth date of St. Nicholas, which is March 15th in the year 270. Not specifically at Christmas time, so it's probably not a date that is celebrated very often, especially with a Christmas theme, although we do celebrate St. Nicholas Day on December 6th or 7th, depending on where you are, and that's the date that he died. But if we look at Grandfather Frost, or Ded Moroz, or Morozko, we find the date of his birth is November 18th. So slightly different, but still pretty interesting. I find that one is so closely tied to the Christmas holiday, and which is St. Nicholas, but one, the date of birth is so much closer to when we typically celebrate either a winter solstice or a winter celebration or Christmas time, which is Morozko. So, obviously, there is some sort of day of birth, but Grandfather Frost, or Ded Moroz, which is what I'm going to say from here on, I'm going to say Ded Moroz, Now that includes Jed Marosh or Dead Marosh or Morosh or Moroz or Dead Moroz. Any of those, that's who I'm talking about, Grandfather Frost. But November 18th is Dead Moroz's birthday. Many centuries ago, many centuries ago, Dead Moroz went by the name Morozko. And this was when he was deified, right? So this was a pagan god of winter, ice, frost, freezing, and was incredibly powerful and vengeful and mean. And in fact, according to legend, Dead Moroz or Morozko was actually married to Winter herself, who was also mean and unforgiving. So that in and of itself tells you a lot about the history of this character and where some of this, maybe some of the meanness and the grumpiness may have come from initially. Because wintertime is unforgiving. So if we're talking about characters that represent or can bring in the cold and the long nights and the freezing temperatures, the icicles, the awful storms, that person likely would be an unforgiving, kind of mean or grumpy, less friendly entity. So this totally makes sense. So if we're looking way back at the history, the mythology of Morozko, well, here we go. Married to Winter, obviously had lots of powers over the ice and frost, so pretty cool. Now, as far as what Dead Moroz, which is the modern interpretation, which is what Morozko has evolved into. Now, as far as what he wears, so that varies from place to place. Typically, though, Dead Moroz typically wears blue and white, no red. Though occasionally, especially post-Soviet bloc, there have been more red interpretations as the Western Santa Claus, St. Nicholas character has become more common as the communist bloc was broken up and the religious celebrations were allowed to happen again. But typically, Dead Moroz wears blue and white. And the reason for that, many believe, is that it because it helps him look like a Russian nobleman from times long before the western part of Europe was a player in Russia. So often his coat is not trimmed in white fur, but rather it's white cloth and it's ornately decorated with white and gold designs. So, you know, we see the character of Santa Claus who wears the furs, which makes sense if he's a North Pole, he's so far north. But this character, Dead Moroz, Grandfather Frost, uses ornately designed noble decorations all over his visage, basically. So anything that's visible. He also carries a large white staff, 6 to 7 feet tall. You sometimes indicated that it was made of ice itself, which is pretty cool to think about, and makes sense for a wizard or a powerful entity that has power over frost. Imagine Elsa, but bigger, scarier, and meaner, I guess is a good way to look at it. So, another interesting fact about Dead Moroz is Dead Moroz has a home that's not the North Pole. He lives a few hours north of Moscow. The home is Veliki Ustyug. Now, I may be mispronouncing that, but I'll put it in the show notes and you can Google it and find out where it is yourself. But it's just a few hours north of Moscow. I talked about different modes of transportation for different Santa Claus characters in a previous episode, and I mentioned the Troika. And Dead Moroz specifically uses a Troika, which is a 3-horse sleigh. And what's interesting is not specifically that it's 3 horses, but the way that it's designed. I recommend looking at it. It's easier to get a visual, in my opinion. But essentially, the horses are kind of pointed in different directions, and it makes changing directions a lot easier. It also makes unstable ground a lot easier to traverse. So, super cool. Yeah, I think the visage and the idea that we get of Grandfather Frost is really, really interesting and really cool. He's this grumpy old guy with lots of power, likely lonely, lives in the middle of nowhere, and has a 3-horse sleigh. If we go and we look at some of the sort of intricacies of the character of Dead Moroz, we get a few little tidbits of knowledge that are pretty cool, I think, that kind of separate him from Santa Claus and from the typical Santa story that we see across the world. One, he typically visits on New Year's Eve rather than on Christmas Eve. So this is mostly a modern thing, and it's credited to Soviet non-religious days. There are some who say that he comes on his birthday, which is November 18th. There are some who celebrate Dead Moroz on the winter solstice, which goes back more to the pagan roots of Morozko. And then there are also some who still have him come on Christmas Eve, which is a pre-Soviet and post-Soviet kind of tradition. So, Dead Moroz traditionally in modern times has come on New Year's Eve, but that's not a hard, fast rule because all other places. But in Russia right now, much like NORAD in the United States tracks Santa on Christmas Eve, GLONASS, G-L-O-N-A-S-S, tracks Dead Moroz on New Year's Eve all around the country, all around the globe. So I think that's really cool. It's very similar to what we have in the United States, which you can watch typically on the Weather Channel, or your local news station might do this too. I'm not sure about other countries. If your country does something like that, please let me know, because I'd love to know about this and to find more information about different entities that are tracking. I believe Australia does something similar. I would imagine other countries do too, but I don't know. So I'd love to hear from you guys. Dead Moroz also occasionally does not travel solo. He goes with Snegurochka, which is the snow princess, and that's either his granddaughter or his niece or his great-niece. And supposedly, she is made of snow herself. Like, her whole body is snow. Now, there are stories of her from fairy tales, and I have one, and I'll link it. It's in a collection of stories that we bought for our daughter, completely unrelated, but in this story, she's made of snow, she wants to play with the other children, they're jumping over like a small flame, and she does it over and over until she melts away, similar to Frosty. It was also too warm outside, and then the next winter she came back to the couple. It's an interesting story. It's very similar to Frosty. In fact, I would imagine Frosty drew much inspiration from this story, whether the person who created Frosty knew that or not. Anyway, so Snegurochka, Snow Princess, really common to be seen with Dead Moroz on New Year's Eve. She accompanies him, and that's part of the softening of the Morozko into Dead Moroz. So Morozko was this really powerful and mean pagan deity. But Dead Moroz is more of this old man winter kind of grandfather frost. So grandfather in and of itself could be two things. Referring to him as grandfather could be a more familial way of looking at it, like he treats the children and everybody as family, or it could just be a colloquialism where we're looking at more of a common way of calling him just like old man. So either way you look at it, though, it's definitely a softening of the character from its original roots. So, let's move on a little bit to some slight variations of Grandfather Frost. In Mongolia, so just south of Russia, between Russia and in China, we have Grandfather Winter, who arrives on New Year's Eve, and, interesting fact, he brings gifts not just for children, but for adults as well. So he shows up with a sack, and he gives gifts to the children and the adults. I think that's really cool. I love the idea that gifts aren't just for children. It's the thoughtfulness, because we as adults, receiving gifts is one of my receiving love languages. If you've never taken the love language quiz, there's plenty of them available. You can find one on your favorite search engine. But receiving and giving gifts are two of my love languages. So this would be the perfect situation for me, because I feel like it's a very personal thing, and it's a time thing. And anyway, so I find this to be really, really super cool. Unrelated to Dead Moroz specifically, kind of, sort of, because Dead Moroz is based on an ancient deity from Russian folklore, but Moscarila in Romania is a pretty interesting case. So during the communist takeover in Romania, they had this character, Moscarila, or Herila, or I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but I'll link it. I'll provide you guys a link to this so you can check it out yourself if you're curious. But he's typically depicted as a young, fit, shirtless proletarian, and he would bring gifts on either December 30th or 31st. And again, that separates the Christmas holiday and this new non-religious holiday, and it reinforces the kind of the political underlying beliefs in Romania at the time. So mostly for the most part, most gorilla has been kind of pushed to the side, and the traditional St. Nicholas or Santa Claus figure, even Dead Moroz, has come back more so into Romania. So, but I thought that was a cool look into what exactly kind of happened in Eastern Bloc during Christmas, during the Soviet takeover. There's a few more. So in Serbia, they have Božić Bata, which is Christmas Brother, and he would arrive and leave presents under the Jelka. But again, this isn't directly related to Dead Moroz. It's based on another sort of distantly related Slavic deity. But super cool. I'll link this one again also so you can have that. And then finally, my favorite, and I'm still searching for the collectible for this in the International Santa Claus Collection, but it is Starman from Poland. Sometimes with Starboy, but usually just Starman. And in Poland, Starman would show up on Christmas, though this is typically part of in the western portion of Greater Poland, and it was especially tied to caroling. And so, essentially, Starman would show up at a house, and they would offer gifts, and he would want to take them to go caroling, go from house to house, and Starman would go from house to house caroling, singing songs, and would be rewarded, and he would leave gifts. And so, some people think that in this portion of the world, that caroling got a start from this tradition of Starman, and that's kind of where it has evolved from as a larger tradition in the holiday. So, well, there you have it. Kind of a real quick, like 10-15 minute overview of Dead Moroz. I hope you guys learned a little bit of something. I hope this was interesting to you. There's some really cool images of kind of what I imagine a Russian Grandfather Frost sorcerer would look like, and whenever I Google it, whenever I search on whatever search engine, it's exactly what I have in my mind. It looks cold and amazing and powerful and strong and super, super cool. So very cool history, very distinctly different from most other Santa Claus figures that we have across the world. And in future episodes this season, we are going to dive in. We've got 11 more episodes this season before Christmas, so be sure and check your calendars. There'll be about one a week. Some weeks we'll have two, some weeks we won't have one for, you know, more than 7 days. But we have 11 more episodes after this one, and there'll be things from Christmas movies to St. Nicholas Day, Epiphany, and gift-giving, Christmas caroling, all kinds of things. And I am going to, we have a big episode that will be the week before Christmas that's going to be all about Saturnalia and pre-Christian solstice celebrations. I know a lot of people are interested in this. I find it fascinating. I might even put it out a little earlier, but I've been researching this one for months and months, and I'm really, really excited about it. So, yeah, so without much further ado, let's get to the finale of The Lost Years of Santa Claus and How Santa Learns the Languages. I'm sure that a lot of people were like, this has no relation. I have no idea how this is all connected. But you will see, I promise, you will see. It'll all tie in together, I promise. And with each episode from here until the end of the season, there will be another story. We've got, I believe, 4 more stories to finish. And yeah, I hope you guys are having a great day. I hope the weather's nice outside for you, whether you want it cooler or warmer. I hope it's perfect for you. Here in Texas, it is finally starting to cool off. I say with my fingers crossed, hoping that I'm not betrayed by 95 degree heat here shortly. So without much further ado, here we go. Lost Years of Santa Claus. So it was the next day, Chris and Dovgim wound their way through the vast marketplace, stopping at stalls, sampling food, eyeing the diversity of goods, and Chris enviously spotting trinkets and treasures he would love to take back to his siblings and the plethora of other children he visited. Foods were roasting and sizzling, sweets were stickily calling to the duo, and their mouths watered at the endless rows of fruits, treats, and snacks abounding from head to foot. Chris's head, not Dovgim's. After about an hour of wading through only a handful of rows, the friends found a spot to grab a bite to eat and discuss their plans for the rest of the day. As they sat to eat and drink, a third chair was pulled up to their tiny table, and the starkly pale face of Floral smiled at them both, leaning her chin on upturned hands, elbows planted into the table. "Hello again," I knew we would find each other. I said it last night, and I'm never wrong. It's something you'll learn about me. She looked at their food and drink, got up abruptly, and returned a few moments later with her own victuals. Chris and Dovgim had spoken nary a word, nor even taken their eyes off the elven beauty, though for different reasons. Dovgim's disgust was apparent, and Chris's, well, interest was equally obvious. Chris welcomed their new friend and slid his chair over to accommodate, dividing the space on the table into three. Or rather, it would have been three equal spaces if Dovgim had done so as well. As it was, Chris and Feloral split one side of the table, and the grumpy gnome widened his elbows to claim imagined territory usually reserved for children's squabbles, though Chris and Feloral hardly seemed to mind the close quarters. After finishing their food, the three briefly discussed what to do next, Feloral's ideas and contributions simultaneously being immediately accepted and immediately rejected, only adding in a bit of confusion. Though the decision had already been more or less made, they would simply continue where they'd left off. Chris wasn't carrying his bottomless magical bag with him, as he didn't typically stray far from home with it unless he needed the extra capacity for a very specific purpose. This trip was only going to be a brief venture to grab a couple of items, mostly it was intended as a getaway and a means to force Chris to leave his room. Dovgim adjusted his waist-level bag, and Chris slung his pack over his shoulder as Felora helped him find his second arm's path through the opening. As she did so, one hand brushed across Chris's shoulder and ever so lightly opened the top of a small vial and poured a shadowy substance into a small opening in Chris's pack. The day continued much as it began, and the trio wound their way through the maze of shouts, squeals, sizzles, and laughs, all three enjoying the day thoroughly, even Dovgim. At the end of the day, Chris and Dov headed back to their inn and parted ways with Feloral, who promised to meet up with them in a few weeks back at the capital, somewhere she'd never been but had always intended to go. She gave Dovgim a hug that he tried to slip out of but could not. Then she hugged Chris and gave him a brief peck on the cheek before gliding off. Disdainfully, Dovgim shook his head and reminded Chris again of the trouble he was going to be in if he didn't distance himself from this girl he was clearly fascinated by. Over dinner, the twosome decided to head to a wizard's tower the next day and then head home the following morning, still somewhat overwhelmed from the ferocity of the day's journey through the marketplace. You know, I've been less tired after we fought those ogres in the woods, or the time we battled an ice dragon and Grilla herself. Who knew shopping would be so draining, said No, kicking off his boots and hopping onto bed. Chris, for better or worse, was still in a somewhat dreamy state and replied that he couldn't even imagine feeling tired, that he could go back out to the market and spend days there. His eyes anchored themselves at the lone window, seemingly tracing a path he thought Feloral would have taken back to wherever she was staying. A disappointed grumble from Dovgim later, Chris snapped back to reality and realized that the room had gone dark. Smoky wisps from the lights in the room wound their way into the ceiling, the gnome still grumbling as he rolled over and pulled his blanket taut. Chris kicked off his boots and slid into his own bed, laying atop the covers, staring at the ceiling, watching the last wisps of smoke fight over which would escape into nothingness first. Distracted but pleased, his mind wandered to the stunning Alva he'd met only the night before, thrilled with the possibility of seeing her again, hopefully sooner than later. Near him, in his bag, a black smoke settled to the bottom and blended into the shadows perfectly silent. Unseen and unnoticed, it waited. Months later, the time had come for Chris to travel back to the human realm. He'd been distraught at not seeing Feloral since that day in the market, and Dovgim had mentioned several times that Chris should forget her and focus on living his life rather than pining over some she-devil from the world of rock beneath theirs. Chris reminded Dovgim that Chris really wasn't from this world either, so to stay true to his discriminating mind, Chris should likely be left alone by Dovgim too, right? Begrudgingly, the gnome conceded the point but stayed resilient with the fact that something was off about the girl. On the floor, Chris had packed Bylar's bag of belongings with all he'd needed for the trip. Next to it, also on the floor, sat Chris's ordinary bag. With the conversation continued, a smoky shadow wound its way along the floor, almost ethereal in its transparency. The near-invisible mist silently worked its way into the lining of the magical bag, daring not cross the actual threshold of the bag itself for fear of being lost forever in the pocket universe. And there it stayed, perfectly still, waiting for its moment. That moment came 2 days later as Chris and the four wardens burst out of the water, springing forth like a fountain of magic from a gate, now underwater. The wardens, having assumed the shape of seals for this portion of the journey, delighted in the spray of icy water and splashed each other, pulling Chris along. After a few more hours, they had arrived on land, and the wardens wordlessly set about their task of checking to ensure the balance of nature in the human world. As they departed, Chris picked up his bag and slung it over his shoulder. In front of him on the ground lay his shadow, and goose skin suddenly covered his body. He couldn't shake the feeling that something was off, but when he looked again, it was just his shadow, sitting motionless. That is, until he saw his shadow on the other side of him, and then it hit him. The first shadow he'd seen was between himself and the sun. There should be no shadow between him and the sun. The hair on his neck standing up, Chris turned his head slightly and saw his shadow stand up before him, though now it was not a faceless reflection. The shadow towered over him, blocking the sun's light from reaching Chris, and cold silence fell upon the entire area. An unnatural sound came from where the mouth would have been. Chris started to speak, but before he could say a word, the shadow burst apart into smaller shadows and they darted in all directions, faster than any creature could run or fly. Somehow, perhaps by luck alone, one slammed into Chris's right arm and fell to the ground. The human grabbed the thing and held it fast. It had all happened so fast, Chris wasn't sure what exactly had transpired, though his heart was pounding and his skin was still perked by the fright he'd just had. After pondering what to do for some time, Chris found a deer and delivered his message to the wardens, trying to keep it simple enough that the deer would remember it. Danger. Help. Emergency. Little more than an hour later, two of the wardens were back in the clearing where Chris had remained. There had been no shades in the human world, as animals would have reported this to them, that much was clear. Unfortunately, that meant that this shade had traveled with them, which was unnerving. Meaning that other creatures could, in fact, travel back and forth so long as they were accompanied by Chris through the gate. Not that the wardens didn't trust Chris, but this did raise some danger signals to them. Nonetheless, a shade or shades loose in the human world was bad news, and likely the work of some nefarious force. They had spread immediately and not attacked, which was good because Chris would have had little means to defeat them, though his staff would have served as solid defense mechanism. Shades, or creatures of the realm of shadow, are dangerous creatures with the ability to hide in shadow and darkness. They can jump from darkness to darkness and shade to shade and shadow to shadow. They can possess and hide physical objects, but cannot maintain physical bodies if they are struck with magic energy or objects imbued with magical energy. Why they were here was of no immediate consequence. They needed to be destroyed. There did not appear to be any means to return to the non-human world for them, though, which meant the Shades would likely try to sneak back with Chris on his return journey. Later that night, the other wardens returned as soon as they'd gotten the message passed from creature to creature. A larger discussion was had, and it was decided that Chris and the wardens would need to hunt down the Shades, but they could not allow any of them to wreak havoc on the human world. Thus the hunt began. Chris would not return to his new home for months, and after finding and capturing or destroying well over 100 of the Shades, Chris and the wardens determined they were safe to return. Having traveled the world over many times, Chris had learned much about the world he was born into and had decided to continue to learn more and more upon each journey home. There was also the desire to ensure that all the Shades were truly banished, as Chris voiced his opinion that there were likely some still out there, hiding and plotting. The wardens agreed, but needed to convene with the others and the elders of the other races in order to best decide what to do. Thus it was that Chris and his companions returned to the world of magic and left behind 5 Shades. And the Shades searched. Tirelessly they scoured the planet, looking for their treasure, and biding their time before attempting to return. When their treasure was found, years later, only 2 of the Shades remained, but they joined themselves together and crept behind Chris on his trip, watching and waiting for the moment of inattentiveness. All they needed was just a moment, long enough to slip their treasure into Chris's bag, or more properly, into Bialar's bag for safekeeping. And so it was that they did. 10 years after first escaping, a Shade whose name could never be pronounced properly by a human tongue slid its misty hand above the opening of the bag and noiselessly dropped in a nondescript bracelet and then sunk away to celebrate. Chris spotted the Shade nearly instantly as it began to leave and smashed it into the ether with his staff, breathing a sigh of relief. Thinking he'd escape danger, Chris finished his task of distributing gifts and headed back to the land of magic, unknowingly carrying an item of incredible destructive power. And there you have it, everybody. That is the end of part 3 of How Santa Claus Learned So Many Languages and Can Communicate with So Many People. As you can see, Santa Claus had a task, and it was his own fault what happened. He was tricked, he was deceived. Who is this elf, Floral, from the underneath? An under-elf, as they call her, or an under-elva? Where did these Shades come from, exactly? Are there any more on the human world, and there seem to be plenty in the magical world. You can see the journey that's unfolding, and I don't think this is going to be the last we hear of Floral. So I hope you enjoyed the story today. I hope that it leaves you with more questions, which is good, but I hope it answered a couple of questions too. So I hope everybody enjoyed today's episode, both in learning about Grandfather Frost and in learning a little bit more about the history of Santa Claus. I have loved creating these episodes for you. I cannot wait for you guys to hear the next episodes, and I cannot wait to hear from you guys personally. As always, you can email us, lostchristmaspodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook and send me a message. I do my best to reply pretty quickly. You guys have been so wonderful. I cannot thank you enough. I'm humbled for all of you for taking the time to value my podcast enough to listen to it. It's a labor of love. I absolutely love Christmas. My name is Jeff, and welcome to Christmas season again. No matter what anyone else tells you, once it gets to the burr months, it is 100% Christmas. All right, well, be looking for the next episode, and as always, like and subscribe. We'd love ratings for any podcast system that you listen to, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Any way you can rate it and subscribe, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Come over here, you'll find a wonderful surprise.